That was a really special little flow we're starting in on. You're sharing a little bit about like growing up being really involved in the church. Would you say
this is an interesting thing you and I share? And it was formative, but it's also we're separated by it now from like a pretty considerable span of life. But I think we both found something that felt like it mattered.
Yeah. In Christianity.
Right.
Yeah. And what was that for you?
So I lived in a fishbowl as a missionary kid. And that's a cliche term for being put on display. And you're almost you're supposed to be the example of the ideal parents or ideal home. And that's not usually the case. Being a missionary kid or a pastor's kid is really, really challenging. They tend to be the craziest.
Yeah.
In their teen years.
Yeah. Because of the pressure.
Huge. Mm-hmm. Huge. And I went through that phase of challenging it, but I still believed. And I grew up in a very violent home where to the public everything looked A-okay, but behind closed doors it was hell for 16 years. But I still believed in the goodness of the faith, and I just decided this was a false prophet. This was a really good con man portraying himself as a missionary.
Wow. To have that level of discernment, you know, is pretty potent.
And a strong desire to hold on to anything.
Yeah.
Like, it's... that's interesting. I'm going to sit with that for a second.
Yeah.
What was it like for you?
Well, it's interesting that you speak of the fishbowl, because I've heard myself say before to other people about that time that I feel I was looking into the fishbowl, because I grew up no sort of religious connotation whatsoever. It was totally hands off. I had never stepped into a church, had no idea what if there was a difference between Jesus and God and Buddha and whatever. I didn't even really know those words. And so I always felt like as I approached Christianity and going into the church in my like mid-teens, I would say that I approached that like from the outside looking in, you know, because I was the kid that was like, what do you mean John? Like, turn to John? What?
Well, so no reference for...
No reference point at all. And I was like, what do you mean turn to John? I was like, where's John at? John, are you here? I'm supposed to, like, talk to you or something? And they're like, no, in the Bible, it's a book in the... Oh, okay.
All right, where is it?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you know that in Sunday school, since the age of, like, 4, they have races for kids to look up scriptures? That's how they learn it. It's like you're stepping into a pretty devout religion. Like, fundamental Christianity is kind of hardcore.
Yeah.
It's drilled in, and so when you lose it, if you step away or you find that that's not your path, it's devastating. Because you can feel tricked or misled, or you can feel like a fool, like we were talking about before. Your peers are like, hey, listen, buzz off. And you're like, yeah, no, but I found this thing, and it makes me feel good about myself or feel loved, and then because I'm loved, perhaps I can love others better.
Yeah. And I think that's something that we both shared, right? Even though we're coming from two sides of the fishbowl, it's like we both latched on, because I can say we had significant challenges in our upbringing.
Right.
It was really nice to have something to hold on to that did at least speak of love, right? That did attempt on some level or another to uphold that love and that consideration, that the feeling good and sharing the good with others, you know? So I feel we both gravitated towards that.
It connected with something inside of us that was so deep, almost primal.
Yeah.
Because you're a very, very kind guy. When I'm talking about you, Seth, and when I introduce you, I tend to like introduce kindness as a huge part of it. Because I respect that. Especially in men. I think it's a huge strength.
Oh, man.
To be gentle.
To be gentle, yeah. I can thank being raised by a mom for that. You know?
Big time.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. There's a definition in scripture that I haven't thought of in a while. And it talks about what love looks like. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting like chicken skin, goosebumps. It's not a pigeon word. Like love is patient, love is kind. I'll never forget this. It doesn't envy. That right there is huge. That means that you don't possess someone if you love them. Mm. You're kind of supposed to free them. Mm-hmm. And if you're loved by them, there's something hugely freeing in perfect love. And we're human, so we are by nature imperfect. But that one, that love doesn't envy, for me was really cool. So I had to learn a lot about that.
Wow. Yeah, because what is the nature of envy? Or like, what is envy, you know, founded upon?
Selfishness.
Selfishness.
For me, that's where I had to like search myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Yeah, and the selfishness comes from like that identification with this other person as, ironically, part of me. And so to lose that person, I'm losing part of myself and I can't have that. So I'm like, that selfishness is sadistic in a certain kind of way, because it's like, wait, hold on. I own you.
Yeah.
Like you said, the ownership.
And that tends to be a masculine thing.
Yeah.
It's a very different from the feminine.
Sure.
There's a security sometimes in possessiveness, mm-hmm. or if they come from a place of previous hurt or experience, you can be a little bit desperate that that doesn't happen again. But for men, there's this arrogant possessiveness that this is just the way it is, even in our day and age. Mm-hmm. We're not talking even 50 years ago or 100 years ago where you're like property, mm-hmm. which is still the case in some places around the world. But even in our day and age, men get by with a lot of shit slides that shouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially in that possessiveness. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I feel the envy and the many tentacles of envy and jealousy and these kinds of things sort of get masked by men, right? Or they learn to express it in a way that maybe it doesn't look like they're actually envious.
Like love bombing. Yeah. That's the overboard, out of balance. But whether it's so if it's subconscious, like a subconscious possessiveness that you just kind of dress up and maybe make it look like affection, that's one thing. But when it becomes a conscious manipulation and you try to foster codependency in that person where you are their security now. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of relationships go south when they start alienating their partner's family in particular, or their support system, because then they become everything. And sometimes the wounds the partner they're trying to control, sometimes the wounds they cause in their family circle or their friend circles are so deep, that ripple effect, they lose those people.
Yeah.
When in fact, they probably need them more than ever.
Yeah.
Especially once the relationship ends.
Yeah. And how does that relate to Christianity, dude?
Oh, echo chamber.
Yeah.
Us four and no more. We've got this figured out. We are the chosen ones.
Right. Right. And then the ostracization of, you know, the people around you if they don't agree, the sense of like pulling people in, like if you consider the role that you were just speaking of in the relationship and how they relate to everyone, that's kind of the placement that like modern religions put themselves in, mm-hmm. where it's like, depend on me, become codependent. I am the one answer to all of your things.
I've done a pretty thorough study, especially in my earlier years, of either the similarities or the kind of the standout points in all major religions and belief mm-hmm. systems. Very few of them will allow someone to feel free when they don't adhere to that belief system.
Right.
Many of them will straight up be hostile towards that person.
Right. Or at least tell them that they're going to be burning in flames for the rest of eternity.
Yeah, like going to get you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a system of control. So if you take away humans out of the belief system or the leaders, there's some beauty in many, many of these. That's why they've lasted like thousands of years.
Yeah.
But what I see, and this is what I believe in my heart of hearts, is that the second control gets involved in one man's control over another, it poisons the well.
Absolutely.
It corrupts, and that's how the Crusades happen.
Yeah.
There's something dangerous about us being in power over each other.
Yeah, yeah. And that, what does that require? I mean, it requires, what comes to mind is this sense of, I am separate from you. You know, that I as an individual have power over you as an individual. Whereas in the actual, you know, if you take Jesus, for example, Buddha was saying the same thing, is we're one. You know, you and I, we're cut from the same cloth. And for one of us to have power over the other is just bizarre.
it's nonsensical.
It's really nonsensical when you come from the standpoint of like, oh, life is trying to overtake life. Give me a break.
It's making me think about you and I's friendship, man. Imagine how goofy it would be if we were both competing for who got to make the call of what we're going to do next. It's just like, this would be the stupidest movie. I wouldn't finish that movie. I'd turn it off. I'm like, this story is dumb. This bromance is going nowhere. instead, we both just fucking love each other, and we're stoked to hear each other's minds, too. You're such a good listener, man. Mm. That's part of how we've ended up sitting down here today having this conversation. And I'm profoundly grateful for that. Mm. And that's what I want to offer as well, is to be that kind of friend to the people who matter. Hell, I want to be the best friend they've ever had. I don't, that my, for my gratification, just because I know what that's like to experience that, and I want to offer that.
Yeah.
That's the bare minimum for me being decent.
Yeah.
Going above and beyond there, I'll just probably cook more meals or something.
And I feel like that's, I really relate to that, brother, and I really honor that and appreciate that from you. And I feel like that was the heart in the whole religious context that we're speaking of, like as mm-hmm. teenagers, like wanting to share, wanting to be there and like offer something that feels really good and like loving, right? And
it's, let's not dive into that for a second, that feeling.
Yeah.
I'm taking myself back there right now.
Yeah. And I'm sure that like as a teenager, and I've definitely confronted some ways in which that was selfish or had some level of like self-interest. And I can very clearly see how a lot of that was genuinely just like wanting other people to feel good. Cause like for the first fucking time, I was feeling like pretty chipper, you know? And the only way I knew how to communicate that was kind of to share what the whole big thing was that was seemed to be a catalyst for this sense of ease and joy that I was feeling, which was, you know, coming through my experience and literally just like sitting with the Bible and like reading random, I just flipped to random pages and I don't know what verse or whatever, if it was new or old or sideways or four ways, but you know, it was, it resonated with me. I remember reading, you know, that famous, the kingdom of heaven is within. I was like,
yeah,
that's some shit, you guys. Like, you know, and that was coupled with a time in my life when I was at such a how to put it into words, sort of, they speak of like midlife crises, right? Crises. And I had like my like pre-life crisis, you know, of just being like so down in the dumps and emotionally tormented and bullied and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, then found out that my dad had committed suicide, and I was like, fucking lost, man.
Yeah.
And
profound pain.
Profound pain, you know? And I was coming into a realization through that deep, dark hit in the rock bottom that, oh my God, out of desperation, I had to look around and find something decent. Because it's like, if I'm going to be here, there's got to be something good going on.
Yeah.
You know? And so what ended up happening is, you know, long story short, I found hundreds and then thousands and then tens of thousands of things over the next, you know, months and years that were incredibly amazing, that were there the whole time and that I just didn't realize were there. I was like, oh my God, this was like, what a silly fool I was, thinking that the world was horrible.
Right.
And meanwhile, it was just my perspective and what I chose to look at, what I chose to focus on, right? And I was sitting there as like a 15, 16-year-old going, wow, well, I'm going to focus on this stuff that's talking about love and like, you know, joy and abundance and celebrating with people and breaking bread and shit. Like, this is all good stuff. This is like, it feels way better than the Section 8 housing conversations I'm having in the streets and getting beat up and stuff, you know? Like, and I just wanted to share that because it felt good. And I'm like, guys, I feel good. You want to feel good? This is great. And they're like, shut up.
Like, you're being a kook, but you're happy for the first time. Like, and on that level, you've never experienced this before.
Yeah.
Dude, my heart aches to think about, like, that period of desperation that so many of us experience as children.
Yeah.
That to say, I'm very happy when I have friends have lived what we call like vanilla lives. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, I can't empathize. And I was like, you know how happy that makes me?
For real.
Like, you had a good mom and dad? You felt safe at home? Uh-huh. Hell yeah!
I want to celebrate. As
it should be. Yes. And like not being bitter against that.
No.
And something, this subject used to be sensitive for me, like religion. And I had animosity because I was so disappointed by it. And that faded away into like a little bit of apathy towards it. And I just didn't take people as seriously if they were overly religious until I was about 22, 23. And then, similar to what you're talking about in those teen years, I had this realization that they're just finding their way. And this feels good or makes sense or helps them forgive themselves, or for my case, forgive someone else. Mm-hmm. And there's a freedom in that. And there's something beautiful and pure. And so I made a choice to try to never discourage someone in their beliefs or anything that made them feel like a better person or actually was a journey they were on. Mm-hmm. I have a zero tolerance for abusers and manipulators, and I can kind of sniff out their bullshit when I meet them. It feels like I trust my gut on that. But I've surrounded myself and my closest friends tend to have taken similar journeys.
Mm. And there's a big difference energetically, right, between the manipulation and then like just the innocent, you know, pretty innocent sharing of something and not realizing the edges that we're not aware of yet.
No, you know? Kidding.
And those edges tend to be edges of ignorance.
Yeah.
Which I've experienced a lot.
Right.
You know, like in those times, right? Of like sharing from the Bible or you know, sharing some of the things that were occurring to me at that time and just people ripping me.
Yeah.
You know, like, dude, do you have any idea what you're talking about? You realize like who you're speaking to, like get fucked.
Yeah. Like having a zero tolerance and leaving you kind of at a loss.
Yeah, but I needed that.
Of course.
You know,
that's
I needed
real life.
That to check my ignorance, right?
Yes.
Because I was extremely ignorant and I wasn't aware of the context in which I was meeting other people.
Yeah.
You know, I was just like on this like giddy up of, oh my God, this feels so good. And it's like, hold on. You know, but I love what you just said about, you know, seeing people in that state, which I would consider relatively innocent. They're not trying to hurt anybody, but they're just stoked on this thing, or they want to feel, you know, validated in it, or they want to feel like they're contributing something meaningful and worthy,
right.
You know, and that tends to like give way to this kind of shouting a little louder than is necessary, you know?
I'm thinking of an extreme story right now.
Ooh.
Ever heard of Nikki Cruz?
Not by name.
The evangelist?
No.
I was in South America when I heard this story. And
where in South America?
I was in Peru.
Peru.
Traveling with my family. I was young, but it made an impression because I had seen bad guys with guns before. And this guy got saved. And he helped run a small gang. And he was just thrilled. He had found this news. There's like this, all of a sudden, something in his life had come in that was so bright. These are my own words, not his. That was so bright that he couldn't help but go change lives. The word had to get out, and he was the one to do it. So he took his gun, and he went to his friend, because he was so angry at how they had been living. A little bit hypocritical, because he'd been leading the gang. But he made his friend get on his knees, and his friend thought he was about to get executed. And he started screaming at him to accept Jesus Christ.
Oh my God.
At gunpoint, his friend's like, yeah, yeah, anything, Nikki. Like, anything you say, yeah, absolutely. So that was his first convert.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
And then he pretty quickly realized that was not the way. That's not what Jesus wanted. But that was his level of heart switch and passion. He took all that ferocity as a gangster and a killer. And he had found something good to do with it. And I've met people similar to that. I was a violent kid. I didn't like guns. I didn't need guns. Neither you and I like guns.
Mm-hmm.
I like my hands.
Mm-hmm.
And I was violent. And I was not really afraid of anyone because I grew up in such a rough home. And so if someone didn't sit well with me, I would let them know pretty quickly.
Mm.
And it was definitely, I would hunt out bullies in my life. Or if I was at a new school or a new zone, I'd go find them quickly and I'd set them straight. And then all of a sudden, I have all these little brothers and sisters. We were scared of the bully. And we would find, make our own little tribe. And so finding Christianity was almost a natural evolution of that. As I grew in knowledge of what faith was, I was like, this is the way. And if you don't live this way, you're almost the enemy. Mm. I didn't have a tolerance for it. And alienation.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. And in some sense, maybe, I don't want to say it's a necessary step, but certainly it is a step that many of us take along the way. Mm-hmm. You know, of that sense of sort of righteousness, you know, or misplaced righteousness.
It makes me think of a pendulum swing the way into like the extremes.
Absolutely. The question that arises is, where does that lead us to? So say you're on that process of growth, and the trajectory is that you will see through the bullshit, you know, at some point. Where does that sort of righteousness and that alienation of others who don't, it's not about them not agreeing. It's mm-hmm. just about like this sense of like, yes, I have seen this very clearly for myself.
I have faith in this. Mm-hmm. Where is your faith? They have statements like, oh, ye of little faith. You coming from outside of the church, you're like, I don't even know what you mean.
Right.
I have no reference.
Yeah. Is ye, who is that?
Ye see?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, man. Mm-hmm. That leads me to this thought. When I realized how much hurt I had caused, and some dear friends in my life, I had pushed away forever. I had lost some friendships. I had done so much harm by the end of it. My rigidity and my self-righteousness and my like drive to convert. And I felt sick to my stomach for years thinking about it. Mm-hmm. I couldn't forgive myself for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And then a good friend of mine, Ryan, we had stayed in touch, but I had said some kooky things to him about needing to break up with his girlfriend and this and that, because that's what God wanted. And like, I'm just pulling shit out of my ass. Like, God didn't tell me that.
Yeah, we rarely ask God, you know?
Yeah, and I was just cruising. I was trucking along, and he knew I meant well, but it was hurtful. And so we took a period of a few years apart. And then we reconnected, and he's a lifelong friend, a close, close friend. We talk often. And I remember at some point I had to talk to him about it and be like, hey, these things I said, and he kind of stopped me. He's like, hey, man, I can tell these are really like weighing on you. This bothers you. I already like forgave you. I already let that go, because I could see your heart was good. You're just using talking kooky, man.
Yeah.
And his forgiveness of me actually healed part of that. I'd already just acknowledged that I was almost a different David, but I owned my shit always. And hearing him let it go and forgive me for it, and us staying close and bonded as brothers meant the world. There's dozens of those examples I will never heal. And I don't know where those people are now. I hope they're doing great.
Yeah.
But I hurt them.
Yeah. And seeing that, you know, perhaps you had no ill will in it.
Yeah, I didn't want to control them. I didn't want them to join my cult. Didn't want their money. I didn't really want anything from them. I didn't want them to burn forever. I thought that was going to be the end thing. And none of us are promised tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
There is this like a fear. You know what? It was a fear motivation. Not a love motivation.
Yeah. So fear and love get entangled and distorted.
Love is just about the strongest thing we feel. Maybe we might love more than we want to survive. We have a primal instinct to survive. The second one's probably to procreate. Third is to get fed. But love, I think of a mama bear. I just saw this video of a grizzly with a couple cubs, and a big boy rolls in. She's tiny compared to this massive thing. He's kind of headed for the cubs. She fights like crazy, freaks him out, he runs away. She comes back to the cubs, and just, I was like, man, that is beautiful and primal. Yeah. That's love. She would die for her cubs.
Isn't it? And so your cubs were those beliefs. In a certain kind of way.
Right.
And I can relate. And really, you know, what that faith of that belief stands for, if you see it sort of as like a symbolic thing for a moment, it really stands for the liberation that, speaking for myself, the liberation that I felt from the intensity of my upbringing and the intensity of my own emotional turmoil. Wow. You know, that was what it really, basically was, to put it into words. You know, I felt liberated from all of that stuff, and I wanted to share it. And I felt like with as horrible as life seemed to be, there couldn't possibly be another way out of that shit. Like, I found the golden ticket.
Yeah, this is like it.
Get on board, you guys. Like, come on. This
is. You are making me remember and feel things I haven't thought of in a long time, man. Mm. Yeah. That wonderful part. For me, it was healing. I had experienced such profound healing. So I grew up in a physically abusive home. You know this. Mm. And until I was probably about 12 years old, junior high, I thought I deserved it. Mm. I thought I was the piece of shit older brother. I was just not only a nuisance, but just like life would be better if I wasn't there. So by about 10, 11, I was suicidal. Mm. And when I experienced this profound story of love, I started loving myself for the very first time, and that changed everything. Wow. And I started becoming a much better friend to my little peers, and I started playing music and being all in and started giving more simply by feeling like I mattered.
Mm-hmm.
Transformative, dude. Yeah. That's what I want other people to experience.
And that's why you shouted so loud. That's why I was shouting so loud about it.
Wow, man.
Isn't that interesting?
That's a trip to think about.
The
motivation or the why of it.
Yeah. And then as it has unfolded, at some point, I don't know what your version of this is, but, you know, I had the house that we're sitting in right now,
mm-hmm.
Shayna's house. She, back in middle school or high school, would call me out. Like I was saying before we started recording, like, she would just straight up call me out on the ignorance and the apparent arrogance of what I was spewing.
Right.
And I had to sit with that, right? I had to sit with the fact that kind of what you mentioned a little bit ago was that you started to lose people around you, that people started to distance themselves and get hurt and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, wait, hold on. Like, this is something really amazing and beautiful.
This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. Why won't you listen?
Yeah, I'm not trying to hurt anybody. Hold on. And I had to face the fact that, wow, okay, this thing that I'm intending to be something beautiful is not showing up that way. What is... I asked myself, what is this... What is going on? What's going off? Because that's not... That's not the idea behind it.
There's a consternation when that happens. There's this like angst inside. I remember feeling emotional and upset.
Yeah.
Partly frustrated with them because I was very hard on myself at this time. Mostly frustrated with me for not doing a better job of communicating.
Totally. Yeah. Confronting our own ignorance. Really. Mm-hmm. We may not have had the conscious recognition that that's what was occurring at the time. Mm-hmm. But looking back at it, it was a confrontation with ignorance and the effects that ignorance has when expressing something boldly. Mm. When something's expressed boldly, but there's a lack of awareness of those edges of ignorance, then a person can, maybe not everybody does, but can come up against that wall and have to confront the fact that, oh my God, something's wrong here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not aware of these things before I started spewing them. And then for myself, once I started to become aware and privy to the fact that I was really speaking from a place of lack of awareness of greater dynamics beyond what I was spewing, I felt embarrassed. I felt versions of like shame, self-shame of being like, oh my God, I can't believe I've been that guy, just kind of like, oof. Now I was aware of what everyone around me was kind of picking up on and being like, oh, it's it's Zeph over there. Oh, okay. And I'm like, oh man, now I'm aware of that.
Bro, here comes David with his Christian medal. I would champion those. Like, these are the guys. They're like, yeah, but we like Journey. And I'm like, I don't know, Journey. No, and like, you're a teenager, so your emotions are heightened. Like, the worst thing you've experienced up to that point have literally been the most painful, worst things in your life. And so, high highs, low lows.
Yeah.
That teenage experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
The shame.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, poof. So, like, what was that? What was that for you? Like, that confrontation with that ignorance? Like, did it kind of unfold over time? Did you have some slaps in the face? Like, what... How'd you, looking back at it now, how did you sort of
navigate? It was a slow thing. The change was a slow thing. It it didn't happen. I believed that this was the way. I wanted to become a pastor later. And experienced all this turmoil from about age 14 on. Like, wanted to help share the good news.
Mm-hmm.
And... at 15, went into the home life, got even worse, and then ended up in foster care that summer. And that was my lifeline, in a way. It was my church community, and I was working a shit job in fast food, and no vehicle yet. I was working on getting myself emancipated so I could be my own adult, and was walking hours every day. I'd walk like up to 12 miles around the small town I lived in just to get from where I was crashing into town to work, and then head to play music at the church's band. And I had a few things I was grasping and hanging on to, but I still, like, I had this, I was living a miserable life, but I was so grateful for it. I was so stoked because I was on the other side of, like, my darkest times. My 16 year of life, I've often recognized it was the longest and hardest year of my life. It was the first time I got into a severe physical trauma. We got T-boned and got slammed into a telephone pole just a few feet away, and the car accordion and busted my knee. It was the first time I hurt my knee, and I was an athlete and I loved activity, and just destroyed my knee in this accident. And that chips away at your nature, you know. It chips away at, like, what my identity of David was. But I still kept hanging on because I thought this was the good news. This was the reason why. over the next couple of years, realized that it's not that deep. In a way, there's not a master plan. These things weren't either being allowed or being done to me by some higher power. It was just life happening all around me. And so then I had to decide who I was. And I took a little bit of a step outside. And I did it without the use of psychedelics, but they would have been damn useful at that time.
Right?
It would have been damn useful for perspective gaining. And I slowly came to this realization that every religion out there, unless they find some tablets from some aliens, which isn't proved yet, like, not that I know of, everything came out of someone's mind, or a group of someone's minds, or a tradition of someone's minds. And that made me feel pretty fucking foolish. Anyone can take substances and say God, they saw the face of God. Most of us probably will feel that way. Some of us were better communicators about it than others. And I realized some of those characters have been the ones I've been following. So it felt a bit foolish, but also started letting it go, but was involved with a very wonderful adopted Christian family that I wasn't willing to lose yet, even though I did not believe. And so,
were they pretty, like, headstrong about it in terms of
fundamentally?
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
I knew that if they knew who I was, I would be spit out.
Like, who you were becoming, anyhow.
Yeah. I made this journey in my own mind and done a lot of thinking and listened to some very interesting, well traveled, well thought, like, philosophical types in my community, and wouldn't talk a lot. I would just listen, try to learn and glean, and I started noticing that everybody has their own worldview. We've all had our own journeys.